this is what a protest song sounded like in the 80s.
What
Isn't
a time.
Crazy?
What a time to be alive.
And by the way, nobody in the 80s knew that. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I was a kid, so maybe I was just unaware. But it's just kind of like, it's like a happy little bop type song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about, like, not ending the world with a nuclear war. Like, that's what it's about.
I mean, that sounds pretty happy to me.
I know, but I prefer that
over the alternative.
You don't really think of, like, protest songs sounding like just poppy, you know, cotton candy type music. But that's what Nina did.
But she sounds so sad when she's singing. She's like,
yeah, because she's
thinking, on the edge of tears, basically.
I know. But then you got the little boppy thing going on, and then it gets all exciting. And
it's like, yeah, my face when there's about to be a nuclear war, and my face when,
when they stop it,
war is diverted.
I don't know, but like normally you think of the protest songs and it's like, war, what is it good for? Like you get the, like, it has the, but then again, maybe the words are in, you know, the words are all lyrics, almost all in German, so you don't, maybe it's all being said.
Plus, it's way, that song is way sillier, though. Wah!
No, I'm just saying, but like that's they're, but they're pretty much right to the point, though. They're not like dancing around anything. And it certainly doesn't sound like a happy song.
Sounds goofy as hell, if you ask me.
Don't make fun of it. I like that song. That's a good one. What do we do? You want to do some audio? We got so much audio.
Yeah, let's do some audio because we have some good stuff.
Why don't you pick first?
Okay, let's start with the audio I wanted to play yesterday, but we only had a little tiny hour-long show and didn't get to.
That's why we have so much, because we didn't get to anything.
Right. So during the presidential debate last month, those two ended up arguing about golf at one point.
Which was weird.
And Donald Trump is still talking about it. This is what he said at a rally recently.
I'm also officially challenging Crooked Joe to an 18-hole golf match right here. Underall's Blue Monster, considered one of the greatest tournament golf courses anywhere in the world, one of the great courses of the world. It will be among the most watched sporting events in history, maybe bigger than the Ryder Cup or even the Masters.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I do think it would be one of the most watched television events in history. If they really played each other in golf, like, I'm canceling all of my plans to watch that.
If I were Joe Biden, I'd be like, all right, I'll play you in golf. But you got to ride bikes with me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's actually fair.
It's always funny whenever Trump reminds us like what his actual priorities are.
Yeah.
When he's like, it'll be so many people will watch this. It'll be more watched than anybody.
Yeah.
It's golf, and it's the he knows everything about golf and only cares about golf and TV ratings.
It's just the fact that it even went there during the debate. It's so sad.
Yeah, that was pretty.
Two people that
want to
be president are like, I can beat you in golf. I can beat you in golf. Like, who cares? Nobody cares. Neither of you are good. Just shut up. Just shut up.
All right. My next piece of audio is actually John Fetterman talking about debates. Let's listen in.
Debates do not determine who's going to win. Whether it was Clinton, you know, wiped Trump out, and of course she didn't win. And of course Obama really lost badly in a debate, and of course he won. And even if you go back to Kerry as well too, it's just not statistically meaningful about the debates. And if debates were that important, I wouldn't be standing right now at the rotunda talking to you as a senator.
It's not all about the debate, though. It's not the fact that we held a debate and Biden lost.
Yep.
Oh, no. It's the way he was acting. It was the way he was carrying himself. It was very concerning to a lot of people. I am tired of being treated like I'm crazy by people like John Fetterman, who are just like, the debate doesn't matter. Yes, it does. It did matter. It mattered to see my president acting that way.
It was not
unable to keep his mind on track. That was disturbing.
Unable to fight back. Let's be honest. He couldn't even punch back because there was a machine gun of things being thrown at him by Donald Trump. Because that's what Trump does.
Yeah.
Right. He's always got his stuff queued up and he's going to hit it all. And there was no punch back because he couldn't. And it was obvious. Rach, you're so right. It's not about whether you won or lost a debate. You put the question in people's heads. can this guy even do this job?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
And there hasn't been a moment since that debate other than, you know, he went out on stage the next day with his teleprompter and talked for, you know, 15 minutes or however long it was. Wasn't good enough. Sorry, but wasn't good enough. We need more. We need more than that. And we just haven't seen anything to turn it around since then. He's still been, I mean, today CNN was talking about this and then they kind of showed footage of him on stage with Zelensky and Biden looked like he was falling asleep on stage. It's like you have to act better if you want people to think that you are a certain way.
Yeah. And look, I mean, we had all the reporting of Trump falling asleep in court during all that stuff, too. Like, I know that those things are true about him. And I think the people that are on TV, in you know, on Twitter, in newspaper articles and think pieces saying, how dare you pick on Joe for being like that when you're not going to pick on Donald Trump? Like, no, you don't understand. It's what we were talking about as a group last hour. Like, the people that are doing that are doing it because they don't want to lose to the guy they already don't like, Donald Trump. The people that are saying we don't want Joe Biden to do this because they're afraid of losing. That's the point. That is the entirety of it. And for people like Fetterman and others to be like, well, debates don't matter. That's not the point.
Mm-hmm. And I agree that Trump is also slipping, but Trump is so much better at buttoning it up when it's time to go on stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that does mean something. If you are unable to button it up when it's time to perform, like Biden was unable to perform the way he was supposed to be performing.
With a week of preparation and time off and all
that's the thing, Wheels. He was at Camp David for a week and then he came out on stage and it was just such a poor performance.
Yes.
And there was so much more to it than just, oh, he's having an off night. Anyone who was watching could see it was more than that.
Yes.
So I don't even think it's all entirely like, oh, I don't want to lose. I look at the situation and it makes me afraid. If he's not cognitively there, that makes me uneasy. I'm not crazy or a bad person or wasting people's time by posing these questions. And I'm just, Dave calls it being gaslit.
Yeah, that's what it is. They're telling you that you're not seeing what you're seeing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On that note, just to play along with this, I got a piece there on Wesley Moore, the governor of Maryland. He was talking about this, about the Biden thing earlier this week, and he hit on something that, to be honest with you, just the idea of it makes me angry when it comes to how politics works.
I have seen him in action. You know, I'm an old Army guy, and I know that I learned something in the Army where they said you don't learn anything about anybody in times of ease. In easy times, anyone can show me anything they want to show me. Anything you ever need to learn about somebody, watch them when times are tough. Watch them when the heat gets turned up. And I watched him when the Key Bridge collapsed. I watched him as my first phone call from the White House came at 3:30 in the morning. I watched as the president gave a press conference at noon that day where he said to the world, we are standing with Baltimore and we're going to be with them every step of the way. And he has been. And so I'm standing with the president because I believe in democracy. I believe the people have spoken. And I'm standing with the president because when we were knocked down as a state, when 13% of our economy was shut down, when tens of thousands of people were hours away from waking up and realizing that they didn't have a job, he stood with us. And I'm never going to forget that. And I don't do disloyalty.
So a couple things here. Let's go back to the beginning when he's talking about you don't learn anything about people when things are easy. You learn when the going gets tough, right? You learn when it's difficult. Right. Like on national television, when your opponent is throwing out nonsense and attacking you and you can't fight back. Mm-hmm. That right there is when the heat is on, and he could not do that. Mm-hmm. The second part about, well, I'm not going to forget that he was there for us when we had the Key Bridge collapse. Okay, so you're not going to forget that he did exactly what a president should have done in that moment. That's exactly what the president's job is. And again, I get it. It's okay. You're on the same team. You both have a D on your chest. That's fine. That last part makes me angry. That idea that I'm not going to be disloyal. Listen, none of this is about loyalty. None of this should be about loyalty. Not to Biden, not to Trump. The question is, who is the best person to do the job for all of the American people? for 330 million people, not just for the people that voted for you or did you a favor or did you a solid or got you a government contract. It's not about loyalty. Loyalty should not be a test when it comes to the president of the United States. You shouldn't vote for someone out of loyalty. You shouldn't support someone out of loyalty. Are they the best person for the job? And if you believe that, then make that case. If you believe that Donald Trump is the best person for the job because of X, Y, and Z, make that case. It's not about loyalty. People that demand loyalty to me are asking for cover. If you're the best, show me you're the best. Don't demand loyalty because of some other thing in the past or because we're on the same team.
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. I was kind of thinking the same thing, Wheels. The loyalty line really annoyed me too. I like this guy, Wes Moore. I think he did
a great job navigating
through this crisis. And I'm glad he had this experience with President Biden. But things change. That's the thing. Like, I've seen President Biden in action too. I've seen him do several things that have impressed me. I've seen him, you know, be super empathetic and talk to people and connect with them. And it's great. Do I think he's capable of maintaining that over the next 4 years? I don't.
No.
I'm sorry. And it's just based on what he has shown me in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. If you want to place a priority on loyalty in a friendship.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or, you know, when it comes to your family members or whatever.
But when we're talking about leading the free world.
We're talking about someone. Yes, we're talking about the most powerful position on the planet. And I would even add any governmental position, because you are there to work for everyone that lives in that area. So, president, it's the whole country. If you're a senator, it's in your state. If you're a representative, it's in your district. If you're a mayor, if you're a governor. That's what the job is. You're not just governing the people that vote for you. It is not about loyalty. See, that's the kind of crap you expect to hear from a mobster. It's about loyalty. No, it's not. Maybe in your world it is. But in the regular world, in the important area of politics, loyalty should be the last concern. Capability should be the number one concern. TGS on a Thursday, another 80s Thursday. Did you guys know this is a protest song too?
Mm-hmm. It's protesting a lack of love.
Protesting the great hot dog shortage of 1983. No. I don't know. I don't know what that song's about. I turned that one off every time.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Protesting.
Most normal people do. It was very popular. That was a huge hit.
Protesting my GF breaking up with me.
Is that what that's about?
I don't know. It's a great song, though.
Yeah.
I've never listened that closely to the lyrics.
Yeah, it's just a jam.
It's just it's a high school dance song. And a middle school dance song.
It was. No, for sure. That was a huge, like, high school dance song in my day. Didn't like that one.
A pretty girl is like, do you want to dance?
Oh,
he's like, oh, this song sucks.
No, I hate this song. No, you don't understand. In that time, it didn't matter what song was on there. that was happening, yes. It was a yes, always.
Because you went to an all-boys high school.
Yep.
Like, how did you meet girls?
It was not easy. No.
He was dancing. So we all had, the boys were just dancing together.
We'd all just be like, this is stupid. We had unofficial sister schools.
Okay.
Right? There were two girls' schools that are same as ours, basically. You know, the girls' Catholic schools. One was on one side of town. The other was on the other side of town. Ladywood was one of them. And the other one was Mercy. And then, all had events.
Ladywood.
It was. It was Ladywood. It not only was, it is. I think it might be closed now. But that was the main one. That was like our main sister school was Ladywood.
Did you have dances with them?
Yeah, yeah. And we would hold them, and then they would come to ours, and then we would go to theirs. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't know any other experience. I didn't go to the big public high school. But I will say that it made the experience of being in high school, I think, completely different than it would have been otherwise.
Because
when it's just you, just dudes, or just the girls, it's like you don't care. You're not worried about what you look like. You're not trying to impress anybody. You're just there doing work.
Mm-hmm.
And you show up like, did I take a shower today? No, I did not. I do not care.
I wonder if it would be better. I wonder if like more people would excel in school if you took that part out of it.
I would not change it for myself.
To where they're obsessing over, you know, girls
like,
or boys.
Even this many years later, if you had said, if you could redo it, what would you do? I would do the same thing.
Mm.
I would do the same thing because it in that sense where you're essentially it was kind of the lesson. It's like you're just here to work. You're not here for social stuff. You're not here for, you know, a fashion show. Like there was no competition, like who was going to be the best dressed. Nobody cared. Nobody gave any craps at all. You were there to learn and play sports. And that was really it.
Sounds pretty fun.
I will say, though, like I'm sure there are negatives that I'm missing.
Yeah,
because you did you know, one of the things you learn by interacting with, you know, both boys and girls like in that setting, in the public school setting was, well, you learn how to interact with people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes in the separate
setting,
bro
fest 24/7.
Exactly. Right. And then when you get to college, it's part of like you still had to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured it out. It worked out OK. I met the Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was happily ever after.
It kind of was, which is really, really creepy, but it is. I mean, like,
it's not creepy. It's cool.
Not
does
right.
Susan know that she's like the first woman you'd ever met?
That is not. That is definitely not true. The first one
outside
I met,
of Lady Wood, of
put
course.
It this way, the first one I met that I wanted to keep hanging around with after a while. No, she hated me though at first.
Yeah, that's what you said.
No joke. If I came in the room, she left. I'm not
those
exaggerating.
Those are good stories.
And she will back me up on that, like freshman year in college, because we had all the same friends. That's how we ended up being friends and then dating after that. If I came in, she left. Like, bye, see you guys. I got homework.
Just because you were like too loud or
too
what?
Too loud, too cocky. Basically everything you guys know about me. Too attractive, I think, was a big part of it. Like, yeah. I just can't be around
like,
him.
I can't
just,
even look at that guy in the eye.
I can't control myself, this guy with the messy ginger hair. No, I was too jockey, too loud, too smart-assy,
mm-hmm.
too pranky. Basically everything that she hated.
And then you wore her down.
I did. I don't know how I did that. Isn't that crazy? Like it just
ground her into dust.
I didn't even have like a grand plan. It just eventually went that way.
Did
great?
It make you sad whenever she would leave the room whenever you came
No,
in?
Because we didn't really know each other that well. I didn't really register it right away. And then I started to be like, hey.
That girl's always leaving.
But at that, you have to understand, though, like 19-year-old me was been like, I don't care. Like, whatever.
She sure does have a lot of homework.
You're like, whatever. It's not like I'm going to marry her or anything.
Exactly. That would have been me at 19. Little did I know.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Good day on DGS when we look at the rundown and see that it's a Ricky day. Good to talk to you, Ricky. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Always good to chat with you.
You know, it was not a great day yesterday. Ooh. Obviously, a couple of tough losses. I will say we'll get to some of the good things lately, but yesterday was just difficult on the pitching front, and the Royals swung the bats well.
Yeah, and, you know, the Royals and the Cardinals are kind of even in terms of, I looked at all the numbers, pitching, hitting, defense, you know, kind of pretty similar, both six games over 500 going into the day. So the Royals are for real, and of course, they started out better. They've been declining. The Cardinals the other way around. But, you know, the Royals have some good young players. They have some good young pitchers. And it just wasn't the Cardinals' day. Their bullpen, Kevin, Cardinals' bullpen wasn't as good as we're used to seeing.
No, and I know it's been fantastic, especially like the big 3+1. I think we got to put Ryan Fernandez kind of in that mix because he's really pitched his way into that significant of a role. That's kind of one of the worries, isn't it, Rick? Like, you know, not overworking those guys. I know it's actually a concern for the Royals and for a few other teams. I think Cleveland, for example, Cleveland has something like 6 guys with 40 appearances, and there's a lot of worry about what that's going to do in the second half. I do think there is some concern in that regard for the Cards because they play so many close games.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. And I think, you know, Chris Roycroft, who did not have a good day yesterday, I think he's kind of played himself into, I don't know how far you want to go with the big 4, big 5, big 6, but honestly, John King's been pretty good.
He's not a
swing and miss late inning guy necessarily, but he throws 94.
Yeah.
He doesn't walk anybody, and you know, he's going to give up some contact, but you know, honestly, he's been great, and I think Roycroft has, despite what he did yesterday. So, and you know, I think there's enough pieces where you can say that those big 3 are going to be protected, I think, as we move forward. And, you know, here's the value I think that the Cardinals have. They've got starters who are older. And at the beginning, we'd say, oh, no, that's not good. They're older pitchers. But there are other teams around the league, and you mentioned Cleveland with what they've got. But
right.
I can point to some National League teams like the Pirates and say they've got a couple of guys. They're going to start worrying about their innings because they're young guys in the rotation.
Right.
You don't worry about Lance Lynn's innings. I mean, you might worry because he might break down, but you're not going to worry because you're ruining the guy's next 10 years of his career. So I do think that oddly, I think that's going to become an advantage for the Cardinals, certainly against the Pirates, and there may be other teams in that vein. Maybe the Reds are in that vein too,
in
terms of some of their young guys.
Well, and you're also in the cases of those other guys that we're talking about, not just those two teams, but the age group that you're talking about. You're also getting to the point where when they're pitching in September, it's not something they've done before. You know, they've not pitched that deep into the season where every one of, you know, Michaelis and Gibson and Sonny Gray and Lance Lynn have done that. For them, the question is much more about being on their game as opposed to whether or not you're worried about the workload.
Well, that's true. And so with the guys that we have, I think that's where you've got to develop the Libertors and the Pallante. Interesting, Pallante threw 101 pitches yesterday.
That
is the most pitches he's ever thrown professionally, ever, including the minor leagues. So he's never thrown over 100 pitches, and he was throwing 97 at the end. So so when you're a young guy, you know, you pay attention to that, and you're kind of in bubble wrap when you're a young guy. When you're older, they get you in kind of like in the brown plastic wrap, and they throw you out on the front porch, and you know they don't worry about you. But the young guys, they protect big time, but Pallante, Libertor, are going and even a Graceffo and Klopfenstein, those guys can still be important to the Cardinals in the last 50 games of the year, last 60 games of the year.
Yeah, and look, I think the team has been a little bit careful on the Sonny Gray side of things, but I almost wonder if that is lessened as you go, right? Like, I think the idea here is you want Sonny to be the top of the rotation number one guy that he's been and have him be that for 32 starts and also the postseason.
So here's the difference in my being around the guys, being around – and, you know, everybody's going to have a different opinion about that. But Sonny's different than Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. And so Sonny Gray is a 100% effort guy every pitch he throws, always.
Yeah.
And so when Sonny throws 90 pitches and when Lance Lynn throws 90 pitches, that's different. If Lance gets to 80 pitches, I'm taking Lance, but I could say the same thing about Michaelis. They'll get to 70, 80 pitches, and they'll make something up. They'll flip something up there. And, you know, they're Bob Forsch to me. Okay, they're the Bob. But Sonny's Joaquin Andujar. He's going to be everything. You know, 100% every. And so I think the protection of Sonny Gray is, I think, more important, not because he's the number one guy, but because of the type pitcher he is. He doesn't have I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen a soft pedal for him. But I've seen soft pedals for both Miles and Lance Gibson. I think he probably has one of those too.
Yeah, you know, and I've heard you and John talk about this on the broadcast a number of times with Sonny, that, you know, your effort level or, you know, how hard you're working is not just about what it says in terms of miles per hour, because he's throwing his breaking ball hard. And and look, you know this. I mean, the guys with the best changeups throw it with the same arm speed they do with the fastball.
They do. Yeah. So there's you know, the misconception, and you're pointing right to it, Kevin, and you know, I mean, I threw changeups for a living, and it was kind of hard to, you know, people say, what do you do for a living? Well, I throw the ball slow for a living. I throw a baseball slow to a guy with a piece of wood in his hand for a living. That's my meaning in life doing that. But to actually throw a ball slowly with the grip and with the pressure and the finger pressure and what you do to decelerate your arm, there's work in that is work. And so to say, well, just throw fastballs, it's easier on your arm, I don't think so. I think slider was the hardest thing on my arm, but I think the changeup was certainly harder than a fastball was. It's not like a knuckleball. People say knuckleballers could throw till they're 60. Well, guys that throw changeups, there's an effort level in doing that I think is it may be hard to explain, but it's there.
All right, looking ahead now, we got the Cubs over the weekend, 4-game series. We got a rainout makeup on Saturday. The nice thing, though, Rick, about not just, you know, this particular series, but the nice thing about where we are with the All-Star break starting on Monday and having those 4 days off to reset is you don't have to mess around with the doubleheader. The Cardinals are just going with their regular guys, Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, Miles Michaelis.
I think they're going to be at full steam. I honestly think the off day today makes it even better. But you didn't have to use Helsley. You got him. You got 4 days. and then you got the break after that. So I do think the Cardinals are going to have to be a little bit concerned about how and when they use Helsley, because, you know, all-star guy, you want to make sure that he's fresh for what he's doing. But I think that's the only limitation beyond that. And I think it is set up well. The rain out in the first game against Kansas City, even though it resulted in a doubleheader loss, I think the rain out set up the weekend really well against the Cubs.
Man, and look, I know, the matchups don't always, tell us the entire story, but, the Cubs are scuffling. They may have just lost Bellinger. He got hurt yesterday. Their rotation is not exactly what they would have expected it at the beginning of the year. You got a couple of guys starting Friday and Saturday, and Hendricks and Wesneski, who were not really – they weren't in the rotation a 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now, Hendricks has been a starter forever, but he kind of got moved to the bullpen after struggling early. You're in a good spot, I think, and if you can have a good weekend this weekend going into the All-Star break, four, five, six games over 500, get the break and come out ready, firing. Because I don't think, Rick, that there's a really, really brutal chunk of the schedule coming until about mid-August.
That's right. Yeah, no, I think it's a good spot right now for the Cardinals to keep making a move. And, I obviously thought yesterday would have turned out better, but I will say this about Kyle Hendricks. If Kyle Hendricks comes to the mound in his game against the Cardinals, puts the ball in his left hand and throws it underhanded, I think he's still got a chance to go in seven innings with 70 pitches and no runs. I mean, the Cardinals, he really has been his best against the Cardinals most of the time, not all the time. But, I respect him. I know he's had an up-and-down year, but, he pitched well against the Cardinals in Chicago. And I kind of expect him to be good again. I think he may be the hardest guy to beat, honestly, even though the other guys are maybe a better number. So one other thing I want to say, Kevin, before I forget to say this, yesterday, having a chance to be involved in the celebration of what Whitey Herzog has meant to the Cardinals organization. I just wanted to throw this in there. I know this is not what we're just talking about, but it was very meaningful for me. I'm glad a lot of my former teammates were at the park yesterday, my wife, my daughter, just to kind of celebrate Whitey and be there with his family. Whitey is just I loved Whitey, and I'm glad the Cardinals had that day for him.
Well, I'm glad you went there, because I did want to ask you about that and just not only, your history, your story with him, but also just the feeling yesterday. And, what kind of things do you and the guys that played for Whitey talk about? Is it telling stories and talking about what that was like, or is it a little different?
Well, it's two things. It's one is talking about his genius, because we all saw moments of his genius where he would say something and you go, wow, I just learned something about baseball. Yeah. I mean, everybody that's in the big leagues has played baseball a lot. I mean, to get to the big leagues, you're young, but you've been around baseball a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Summer league, etc. You know the deal. But Whitey was always he was the master's level conversation about the game of baseball. So we all learned stuff from him. I still say things and feel things that I learned from him. But then there's the personal side where, he would say something that was really meaningful to you personally about your own development. So it kind of oscillates between those two things, the genius of Whitey and then the personal touch. And what I've always said about him, he's baseball royalty with a common touch. That was Whitey to me. It was Whitey to anybody that was ever around him.
That was really well put. And, it's funny, Rick, I was listening to the game with you guys yesterday and you told the Dave LaPointe story, which was funny.
Yeah.
And the guy was brilliant, which I think led to part of that sense of humor, too, because I wasn't around him nearly as much. And when I was, it's obviously later in his life. I always found him to be hilarious, but always with that little bit of a smart tinge to it. Right. It's funny, but it's funny because he sees something.
Yeah, he sees. I mean, he would say one of the things he said to me, he said, look, I want you to be you can be a reliever because you hold runners on. And your pitch work quickly, and if you're going to be bad, you'll do it quickly. so it's like, okay, what's he saying to me there? He's complimenting me that I hold runners, field my position, all that stuff. But the other point is, he wants it done fast. He does not want, because of what he felt about defense, he wanted pitchers to work quickly and efficiently and effectively, not worry about the swing and miss all the time, but use the defense. And that was the philosophy of the day. Now, guys couldn't hit home runs the opposite way back in at that time.
Right.
So it was a different game. But for that time, he was communicating something far beyond just those words.
In an indirect way, Rick, I saw that all stuff play out on my own, because what our head coach did in college down at Miami, Ron Frazier, who was one of the great college baseball coaches.
Oh, yeah.
We played Whitey ball. We had that same bouncy AstroTurf. We had the real hot weather like you had in St. Louis in the middle of July. And when you look at the roster, it was pitching and defense, man. We had three center fielders playing in the outfield. We had middle infielders that could run. You know, you had like two guys that could hit for power. You had our first baseman and our catcher. And everybody else was kind of, I mean, it was very much exactly what Whitey Ball looked like. And I grew an appreciation, even though I didn't get to play. I sat and watched it all the time from the bench.
Yeah.
I grew to appreciate
that. But you saw it. You're a part of it.
Yeah.
I did a lot of that too, Kevin. But the fact is, you know, Frazier could have gone to a different program in college and Whitey could have gone to a different team in the big leagues. And he would have found out what worked in that spot and used that. That's what leaders do. And so he was not, it wasn't just his personal philosophy that he brought to St. Louis, but it was, hey, St. Louis is hot. It's not, I'm not in charge of that. St. Louis is hot. AstroTurf is bouncy. The fences are deep. I'm going to make my team and the players that I have here kind of conform to what we have, the parameters we have in front of us. That's what good leaders do, and he was certainly that.
That is brilliant. Ricky, thanks for sharing all of that. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, Kevin. Good to chat with you, my friend.
Always love talking to Rick. We'll do some more baseball and sports in general with Matt Pauly coming up at 4 o'clock. I mentioned when talking to Rick that the Cubs may be without Cody Bellinger. I can change that. They will be without Cody Bellinger for the weekend. It was just announced a few minutes ago that he's been placed on the injured list with a broken finger. So he got hit by a pitch last night, and he is now going to be out for the series, which definitely is good if you're a Cardinals fan. It's not good that he's hurt, but it's good you don't have to face him. Not that he's the be-all, end-all, but he is one of their better players, and it gives you a little bit more of an edge going into the weekend. We'll talk more about that series with Matt a little bit later on. We also have Dave Murray coming up at 3:30 and talk about what's going on with the weather, because he's telling us it's going to get hot.
No, come on.
I'm going to see if I can't get him to change that.
Yeah, he should be able to tweak the weather for us because he controls the weather.
That's what they do, right? Isn't that what you go to meteorological school for?
That's what I thought.
Am I the only one who thinks it's hot already?
I mean,
he keeps saying going to be hot.
It's not as bad as it was a couple weeks ago, though.
It's in the 80s. It's not hot. Right?
And just like, counterpoint.
What was that? That was like a...
counterpoint.
That was almost a Schwarzenegger. It's hot. No, to me, what's your guys' threshold for hot?
Like, 71.
Like 90.
71.
When it gets to be like 95 is when I'm pretty miserable.
95 is kind of my line too. Like,
Sorry.
Not that 93, 94 aren't hot, but
right.
Like 95 is when I look out and I go,
this is egregious.
I'll take that all the way down to 85. But
85?
85.
Well, I'm fat. That makes a difference.
I'm not exactly slim over here.
I'm just saying that makes a difference. Also, I'm not like that. I'm somewhat outdoorsy. I'm not super outdoorsy.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, I am more used to it.
You're super outdoorsy.
Yeah, I'm very much outside in the heat on a regular basis. So there's no question that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're used to things, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, when we're talking with Rick about, like, the advantages of playing at Busch Stadium when you're the Cardinals and it's hot, it is an advantage because you're used to it. You know, when we're down in Miami in college, we had a huge home field advantage because we were used to the heat. And when you're playing a Sunday afternoon game at 1 o'clock and it's 96 degrees and the humidity makes it feel like it's 104 and you're playing the University of Michigan where it's never that hot, it's a big advantage. And
how much does that apply for a team like the Rockies? Is that huge? Like the altitude difference? Does that make a major difference when it comes to games or is it not?
It is one of the reasons why they're never good is the conditions that they play in.
Really?
So there's two parts to it, but the main thing that affects them, it's not the temperature and all that, but at higher altitude, the air is thinner, so the ball moves less.
Hmm.
So when you're playing at Coors Field and you're playing half your games in the thin air, a slider moves less, a sinker sinks less. And a fastball, you know, any pitch that breaks and moves is going to break or move less because there's less air resistance. And then the moment you go somewhere else, let's say you go to San Francisco, or you go to St. Louis, for example, where it's going to be, you know, you're more like sea level and it's going to be, the air's going to be a little thicker, the ball's going to move more, and now you've got to make that adjustment. Where you're used to a slider moving, I'm just throwing a random number out there. You're used to a slider moving 5 inches and now it moves 7. Well, that difference is the difference between hitting the ball perfectly on the barrel and not hitting it at all, or hitting it and hitting it on the end of the bat, that kind of thing.
Huh.
Science.
Learn something new every day.
How about that? Huh. I'm going to tell Dave Murray I knew some atmospheric science stuff.
Time after time. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.